Hey everyone, this is Catherine Dean, the host of the Hype Girl podcast, and you are listening to your favorite blockhead podcast. Where else can you find a show that combines a passion for the Peanuts comic strip and mixed martial arts? Well, that's what you can expect from the host, Brian, as you sit back, relax, and prepare yourself for an entertaining ride. Now, let's start the show.
Broadcasting live. Good afternoon, Blockhead Nation. It is good to be back on the microphone with you and being able to talk to you this Saturday afternoon. In case you happen to be new to the show, you are listening to your favorite Blockhead, the only podcast in the podcasting world that can somehow incorporate the Peanuts comic strip 1 minute and then be talking about MMA and warriors inside the octagon the next. I am your host. My name is Brian Little. Thank you for coming by today. What you can expect in this episode, I'm going to take a few minutes to give a few shout-outs, starting out with the American Slackers podcast, the Ray of JG small room sessions that happened last night. Also, there is a new addition coming to the YFB network that will be announced on the show today. Then, Blockhead is going to walk you through a very hypothetical scenario if the Peanuts characters were to play the game that most of you are familiar with nowadays, known as Among Us. We're going to see who would be considered sus and who might actually win the game. Also, I'm going to be letting loose on a few things that I have on my chest about MMA. I'm going to get some things off my mind and I'm going to share it with you, Blockhead Nation, so stay tuned. To begin with, recently, I was on the American Slackers podcast. Now, granted, if you go back and listen to this show, if you're worried about playing it around your kids, you might want to consider putting on a few headphones. And that is not a stab at the guys at the American Slackers podcast. But as you know, if you come to my show, then very rarely is the C changed to an E. In other words, there's not a whole lot of explicit content unless I have guests on who I do not censor in any way. I don't tell anybody in the YFB network to worry about their language. It just happens to be I stay in my lane. It seems to work out pretty well. But these guys were so gracious and allowed me to come on and do a podcast with them to be able to share how I incorporate these two worlds, Peanuts and MMA. So if you want to go check out the American Slackers podcast, their newest episode, episode 231, you're going to hear yours truly on the other side of the microphone, on the other side in the hot seat, and it was a good time with those guys. So big thanks and a big shout out to the American Slackers podcast. Also, as of last night, just being able to embrace the quality of the music that came from the Podfather studio. I'm talking about Justin Gilley. Being able to hear the small room sessions with the likes of Alex Englehart, Preston Scott, Josh Birch. If you haven't heard this already, you can go back and you can find the Ray of JG podcast. They recently did an episode together as kind of a precursor before the concert, and now it is up on Facebook Live. It's been shared on my feeds. It's been shared on many of the other guys in the YFB network. They shared the link as well, so it should be easy to find these small room sessions. These guys were just phenomenal. Just to hear their talents on the acoustic guitar, how engaging that they were, how well put together that it was from the mind of one and only Justin Gilley. So very well done to those guys of the Ray of JG podcast, and also for everybody that had sessions up there last night. Preston, also especially shout out to you for taking the request and doing so well with the song Wave on Wave by Pat Green. It was incredible. You know what? I haven't done in a while, so I'm going to go ahead and just give that round of applause right now to all of those guys over there. So if you can hear me as I am hopefully lowering this audience here in the background, if you can hear, then I am very appreciative of all of those guys. And I know I wasn't the only one. It was a very successful show. Also, I need to throw in another special announcement for those that have come in today. You've been following the additions to the YFB network. We finally have a new one, and this time we are breaking down some barriers. It's been a little bit of an uphill battle for yours truly to have any females that will come by, except for an exception would be Kim Adragna from the Grindhouse Radio. But finally, I have opened my I didn't ever have a policy, but I have been, it's just kind of hard to be able to get that demographic to come over to our shows. So now we officially have one. So drum roll, please. The newest member of the YFB network, the Fika Talk podcast. If you don't know what that stands for, then Fika is going to stand for Coffee Talk. In other words, these two ladies, Miss Andrea and Alex, fun group to listen to. They are almost to 20 episodes, and they are serious about being in the podcasting game. And they were interviewed by the Casually Kicking It not too long ago. So we definitely, they checked all the boxes. So ladies, welcome to the YFB Network. Thank you once again for your interest. And I believe you're going to be a great addition to our group that continues to grow over here. So it's an exciting time. Business is really picking up over at the YFB Network. These guys know how to show up. They showed up last night for the small room sessions. And we'll continue to show up to support those who we're close to that we love. Those who want to get serious about podcasting, we can support you. We can lock arms with you out there. Now, to get into the hypotheticals, a lot of you might be familiar with this game known as Among Us. Now, if you look at the comparison of it, this game, in some ways, is similar to the game of Mafia. I'm not going to say it's 100%, but if you look at it, there was even a new addition to that game known as the Medic. In other words, somebody can be revived if you have a death or a sabotage. Well, there is a doctor that plays out in the game of Mafia as well. So if you look for it close enough, you have accusations. You have a group that is the imposters and not the imposters. It's really easy to kind of see what direction they go. They have their tasks that they carry out. And I talked about that when I was on the American Slacker podcast. I wanted to try that out with my students. Now the idea has come to me and the wheels started churning and went, wait a minute. Could somehow the Peanuts, if they were to orchestrate this, how would they do inside of the game? Well, to begin with, I'm going to start with the most recognizable character and the second most recognizable character. I know that might sound a little bit depressing, as in somebody who happens to love Charlie Brown, but as you know, he's always going to take a back seat to Snoopy. Snoopy would be dominant as an imposter. I say that simply because how interchangeable that he is. Can you imagine at the beginning of this game when everybody has their tasks, Snoopy and Woodstock being inseparable, if Snoopy is playing this role, even if Woodstock were to call a meeting, an emergency meeting, and gets everybody back in and he tries to accuse Snoopy, well, as you know, he's going to be speaking in bird talk. I mean, who's going to take him seriously? The accusations are going to fall upon deaf ears, so Snoopy all has to do is just shrug it off, and they continue on with the game, because nobody can make head nor tails of what he's saying. But also, just because he knows how to play roles like the World War I Flying Ace, he knows how to play Joe Cool, this is a guy who continues to just be a ruthless opponent if you put him in the game. And I could see him being a strong imposter. So if we look at the ones who would possibly become imposters in a first game, we're just throwing this out there to see what direction it goes. If you like these style of thinking, if you want me to do more of these, be sure and give me comments over there at yourfavoriteblockhead.com/blog. You can send me messages, contact me. You can send me one direct message also through Facebook or Instagram if you happen to like this style of thinking. Moving forward, recently there was a comic strip that came out with one character one time. His name was Leland. Now, I could see him being out immediately simply because he has limited appearances. Most of you don't know who Leland is. I barely knew who he was until I spent more time looking into the comics and also the Charles Schulz Museum. We'll lay out the grounds for who these characters are, when they were introduced. So if you're worried about where you get your comic book information, comic strip information from, then you should be going over to Charles Schulz Museum. SchulzMuseum.org will easily walk you through any kind of history you want to know. And Leland only had one entrance. I kind of thought maybe could we put Rerun in here, but sometimes anybody who looks a little bit suspicious, whether they are or not the imposter, people get rid of them right away and go, yeah, I feel okay about getting rid of this one. I see Leland not making it very far. Maybe the first one to be kicked out of the game if we were going to have the entire Peanuts strip. Now, one that I really had to play with here for a minute, as loyal as he might be, and as following the rules as he would be, I don't know if he would be a very strong player in this game, and that would be Pigpen. Because Pigpen is a guy that is consistently having dirt on his body, can't even keep his shoelaces tied. So if he is told to carry out tasks to tell him to do things like tidy himself up or tie his shoelaces, well, he's going to look at this and go, I can't be inconsistent. So I don't see him completing tasks. He would not be a very strong non-imposter. I just don't believe that. Pigpen would be kind of one of those, well, he just wouldn't be a recognizable one. He wouldn't be accused often, but they would look at him as, are you going to accomplish anything with this? And he would just simply say things like, who am I to disturb history? Again, interesting guy to put into the game of Among Us if you had Pigpen in there. Moving forward with a couple of more. I can just imagine an emergency meeting being called in the midst of all of these tasks, and all of a sudden Linus decides that he's going to accuse Lucy for being sus. That's not going to pan out very well, because sure, she's going to go, I'm going to give you 5 quick reasons why you shouldn't accuse me for being sus. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Those are good reasons. If you're not familiar with that Christmas episode, I hope you know what I'm talking about. Go back to the Christmas episode and watch her boss him around, tell him, I'll clench these 5 fingers together into a powerful mechanism for shutting your mouth. So that would be the issue with that. Linus would be too intimidated, even if he tried to play the game and accuse Lucy out. Now, I can already see Lucy getting into her clique, and they would be carrying out tasks when she hands them out. We'll get to that in just a second. Since Linus is not going to be very successful at throwing his sister under the bus, another ruthless imposter would be none other than the very athletic Peppermint Patty. I've already got 2 of them I would throw out there for you. She would be an excellent imposter in this game. Snoopy and Peppermint Patty would be diabolical in carrying this one out, which means that is the short end of the stick for her right-hand man, her dynamic duo known as Marcy. And it simply would have to come down to if she gets accused while Patty's playing the game, you could just hear it. Well, I'm not the imposter, sir. I mean, how much further do I need to carry that rhetoric between those two? Again, this might be a little bit of a whirlwind, but just if we took the game and put these characters in, I promise you I'm going to get to Charlie Brown, mind you. That means they can't. Charlie Brown and Linus are not going to be able to meet at the brick wall. That's going to come across as an accusation right there from anybody playing in the game. Now, getting back to the clique, Lucy has always been the dominant, domineering female amongst Patty, Frida, and Violet, okay? I can almost see her making sure that these tasks are handed out, and everybody's going, well, what about you? What are you doing? And she would retort, pretty faces don't have to carry out these type of tasks. This is how things work in my queendom around here. Again, throwing all these ideas out, this should be interesting. But I've only mentioned 2 imposters. That means there has to be one here that is in the midst of the clique. Can you just imagine Lucy to go handle a task and out of nowhere happens to appear Patty? Take a look at what just happened. Snoopy is an imposter. Peppermint Patty would be a dominant imposter, but Patty, somebody that you fully entrust to be part of your team and not to be one who would go against the grain, all of a sudden Lucy, it's almost like Et tu, Brute, you know, Julius Caesar and Brutus saying, yeah, me too. Well, you can almost see Patty having that moment of, looks like you're going to have to go, and we have sabotage that happens. That completely spreads the rest of the clique like wildfire, like fire ants, now that your leader has been kicked out of the game. And of course, as we figure out who is and who is not the imposter, we all have to look to our beloved Charlie Brown. And can you just see the Eeyore syndrome that comes out of this? Good grief. I never get to be an imposter. I get killed off early in the game. And then he just stops for a second and says, and how could I bring myself to sabotage the little red-haired girl? We know how he feels about her. We know he would freeze up if he was given the opportunity to call an emergency meeting and make an accusation against her. Now, I leave you on a cliffhanger. What kind of a imposter or non-imposter would the little redhead girl be? I leave you for that one to chew on until we revisit this game next time. Blockhead Nation, thank you once again for tuning into this episode of the Your Favorite Blockhead Podcast. This show is sponsored by KitCaster. Guys, did you know that having a podcast is a great way to grow not only your personal brand, but your business? Here's the secret. We all want to feel connected to brands we buy from. And what better way to humanize a brand than through sharing your story on a podcast? That's where KitCaster comes in. KitCaster is a podcast booking agency that specializes in developing real human connections through podcast appearances. Whether you're an expert in the field or you just have a unique story to share, it's time to explore the world of podcasting with KitCaster. Go to the link at kitcaster.com/blockhead to apply for a special offer for listeners of this show. That's kitcaster.com/blockhead. You'll find that in the blog. You'll find that into the notes for today's show. Let's get back to the episode. Our scripture reading for the day comes from Romans chapter 11, verse 22. Behold, therefore, the goodness and severity of God. On them which fell, severity. But toward thee, goodness. If thou continue in his goodness, otherwise thou also shalt be cut off. The reflection for this comes straight from blueletterbible.org. Those who abide in the love of Christ are assured to be cared for by him as his children, being the sheep of his hand. Never shall those who have been granted drink of the living water grow thirsty, grow faint, grow weary. This is all to remind you to lean upon his everlasting, abounding grace and always trust in the Lord. And abide in the life of his vine. You'll never feel the severity of God's hand, meaning Jesus is your interceptor. Now, to bring this into this thorn in my side, when it comes to mixed martial arts, it's not so much, there is too many moving parts coming up that I would love to discuss. Believe me, I'd love to talk about tonight's fights. I'd love to be able to talk about the main event of 260, but I'm going to save that for another day when I can hopefully get Brother Sin on here to talk about Cleveland's own Stipe Miocic versus Francis Ngannou for the second time to run it back. I would love to talk to you about Masvidal versus Usman too, and move forward into Michael Chandler's chance to be able to get at the shot at the title against Charles Oliveira. There's so many moving parts right now, but I have this gnawing urge to just get this out there because this continues to circle back into an ongoing problem that just doesn't seem to go away. And if it's not one issue, it's something else. I follow a sport that doesn't have a whole lot of set rules, but there are a few of them that you do not violate, and a lot of those can be traced back to the days of Big John McCarthy, when he started watching these guys giving soccer kicks or kneeing somebody when they're down, or even possibly what we can anticipate nowadays. You shouldn't have eye gouges. You shouldn't have crotch shots. Nobody should be biting anybody. You shouldn't have soccer kicks. And this is all brought forward by him as he if you read his book, you can go find it on Audible. You can find it on Amazon. I don't have a link to give you for John McCarthy, but he's got a full book about how all this came to be and how he's the guy that really started setting together some rules for the sake of the athlete, because he was getting tired of seeing this continually circling the drain that is going to lead to an ongoing problem to where this sport already was close to being irrelevant. And nowadays, it's almost like we're circling back to this again, to where rules are supposed to be enforced, yet they don't seem to be a high priority. And I can't lay that at the feet of the ref. I have to ask these questions to the commission. I have to look at where the disconnect happens between New York or Nevada State Athletic Commission, because the event I'm talking about is Aljamain Sterling versus Petr Yan for the bantamweight championship, the illegal knee that happened at the Apex. Now, when this happened, Everybody at commentary, and including the staff, agreed that this was an illegal blow. Aljamain Sterling is down on his knees, and somewhere in there, Jan is looking for the clinch, but he looks back to his corner and says, "What do I do here?" And apparently they told him either to keep punching or he heard to knee him. Now, this is something that was put in place by McCarthy many years ago. Even if it's just one knee, you are a downed opponent. This was talked about on Joe Rogan's podcast. They went back and analyzed how, at the end of the day, 100% that this was an illegal blow. Okay? So it's been talked about on this show before about how there are issues with eye gouges. And now we just had another one. Just had another one with Leon Edwards. And I keep going, is the problem the gloves, or is the problem that fighters should be closing their hand? Because this doesn't happen as often in Bellator with the design of the gloves that will actually bend the fingers to where you don't have them to where they can extend all the way out. It looks like the design of the glove allows for full movement of your fingers, but as you can tell, these eye pokes continue to happen. You have guys that are getting crotch shots, and the ref is going, do I take a point away or not? There is so much confusion, there's so much gray area, that it is causing a problem. So I went back and I started looking through all of these sources here for Aljamain Sterling, because the issue now is we know it's an illegal blow. But then we look to Sterling, who has to defend himself for being on the ground after an illegal knee. Is he experiencing a concussion? Well, it certainly appeared that way from being in the cage. We're going chronologically here. From when he's in the cage, he's having these spasms. He looks like his eyes are dilated. He can't figure out where he is. Seems completely confused, but that's going to play out later on in the story. So we have our first title fight ever that was witnessed that becomes officially surrendering of the title of a guy who was winning in the fourth round to lose the title by DQ. So Sterling has been, according to Bloody Elbow, that's where I started. I usually begin trying not to get too caught up in the weeds of a lot of these online articles. I start off with Bloody Elbow. Then eventually I start hearing from Ariel Helwani, one of the most well-known journalists in the sport. And he happens to say he doesn't have a problem with Aljamain Sterling leaving the octagon with the title. Just like he would have had no problem if Anthony Smith, who had been kneed by John Jones, he had no problem with him leaving with the title because a rule is a rule. Well, those who are diehard MMA fans know that Anthony Smith wanted to continue to fight, and they allowed him to do it. But this is inconsistent because Sterling walked away, was told, you're not going to continue, and he says, apparently, I can't continue, but he doesn't want the title the way he gets it. He takes the title off and throws it down. He goes and has an interview with Joe Rogan afterwards, and he's so distraught, and this is not how I wanted to win the title. Later on in the middle of last week, a article came out from The Athletic that simply said that Petr Yan committed this foul. Why is it that Aljamain Sterling owes anyone an explanation? And if you start just digging through this article briefly, I can understand where they're going with this about a blatant violation of the rules. But, you know, it gets to where it's a quirk in this sport, because it goes back to what my problem is. The eye poke. What do we do about it? Do we call the fight? We called it with Leon Edwards, but other times the fighter is asked, do they want to continue? I would like to believe there are people that don't doubt the heart of a warrior, but a rule has been violated where there are so few of them, and most of them from the mind of one John McCarthy, the referee. I know this is a lot of information to chew on, but we can all probably agree if a guy is down, he shouldn't be getting a soccer kick to the head. He shouldn't be getting an illegal knee, and it was clear that Jan delivered an illegal knee to Sterling. So therefore, he has to relinquish the title. Dana White is already saying that this rematch is already in the books, and I'm sure there's people that are having this argument about that if he is disqualified, then he shouldn't have an automatic rematch. Okay, we're going to play this a little bit. What Ariel Helwani said he had no problem with was what happened in the cage. It's the after effects that he has a serious problem with. And I can get to that in just a second, too. It's just in this article for The Athletic, which I try to get some of my information from, it does throw out a legitimate question. Can you use this just to do everyday business? You get a crotch shot. Well, you tell them you can't continue. You get the win. Whether the fans like it or not, you just got your purse. That's called business. When it comes to Sterling, you take your title. It's called business. But if you are overreacting to this, which it certainly seems that way after the fact, after he got off of the headset with Joe Rogan, it sure seems like the Best Deceptions and the Clever Cover Story Award goes to Sterling. Thank you for those of you who understand that Dashboard Confessional reference that I just threw into this rant that I've been going on for about 10 minutes, and I've barely even gotten into my point. But getting further into the articles, it looks like on the back end, John McCarthy comes forward and says, well, to me, it looks like he's milking this. And then you have the coach from the other side, on Yon's side, saying, now, wait a minute, if he has a concussion and you're not able to continue to fight, what's all this going on outside of the cage? You know, he's confused. We apologize for what happened. But do you really think that it all comes down to let's book the rematch soon? There's a lot of agreement on that one. It's hard to know what Aljo was thinking inside the cage and outside of it. But, you know, he says, I respect Aljo and the coaches. We apologize. But still, this doesn't help the sport if the guy that's the champion looks to his corner and says, what do I do? And apparently the instruction sounds like give him a knee to the head, which leads to a fight you're already winning. You lose the strap because of a disqualification. This doesn't help. And I've been trying to wrap my brain around what are the actual danger signs if you do have a traumatic brain injury or a concussion from a strike that happens like this. If you don't know, there's a few that have been laid out very clearly by the CDC. I know not everybody wants to agree with their stance on COVID-19, but when it comes to studying concussions, there have been at least 8 of them that tend to be common when somebody has a concussion. You might have drowsiness, one pupil that's larger than the other. You have speech that is more prone to slur. You have this weakness and numbness that comes with it. You have a decreased coordination. There's vomiting. I think it was also mentioned on Sterling's video that he did vomit sometime after the fight. I'm not sure when. He can only speak to that one because he did come out and defend himself. But, you know, some unusual behavior, a bunch of increased confusion. These are all things that athletes can experience and might be hesitant to report about on a concussion. But I go further into low kick MMA going, okay, you're the guy, John McCarthy, that first started talking about how these illegal knees should not be accepted. But he goes, well, I understand that he took the win. It's just business. Which, that can very much be the case for Sterling. But him milking it, and of course, then Sterling getting all wound up about it. You know, and that's about where we come to at this point. Hey, you see how this all circles back into the problem is that these penalties are not being treated as a priority by the commission. If they were, we wouldn't have so many eye pokes. If it were a priority, we wouldn't have so many crotch shots that go unchecked and there is no penalty whatsoever. That's where my rant is at this point, because I've had it. I'm really frustrated about all this because it's already hard enough to defend the sport that I happen to like. My rant is on penalize the fighters for these fouls. Penalize somebody for doing a soccer kick or an illegal knee. Do I, as a casual fan, have to come in and clarify that for you? Wherever the disconnect is, from the referees to the commissions to the corners to the athletes that are in there. And maybe I'm holding fighters to too high of an intellect. Maybe that's my own fault, my own cross to carry. But it really ticks me off when I don't have a leg to stand on. I cannot defend my sport. I cannot defend Peter Yan. I cannot defend Sterling for going backstage and going face-to-face with Henry Cejudo, who is nowhere in the discussion for any type of a fight. If you really had something wrong with you, why are you stopping for all these iPhones so that they can get an angle on you with Cejudo, who is retired from the sport, allegedly. And that's another guy I've got an issue with. Why do I have a problem with Cejudo? Not because of his athleticism, but because of who he became after Chael Sonnen told him on his podcast that he doesn't have any fans. He's a very likable guy and an Olympic champion, but then all of a sudden, he gets all up in his feelings, and he decides to go and change his persona, and now he's coming out wearing all these Burger King crowns. He's throwing these snakes around, pulling rabbits out of the hat. He's taking fighters' faces, putting them on pillows, and kicking them across the room, and nobody understands what his message is. We didn't tell you to go back to the drawing board and rewrite everything and be controversial. We just wanted you to get better on the mic. That would have helped out your career, Henry Cejudo. But you don't have any say on this one. If you're worried about how they're going to pay their penance, Peter Yan, you should be facing Sterling as soon as possible. Sterling, if it was all business, you should be facing Peter Yan, who was beating you for pretty much 3 to 4 rounds. Don't even talk to me about this Henry Cejudo fight. That's how you pay your penance. You two are going to run it back. And then, who's sitting in the batter's box to face either one of you for the championship is the number one contender known as Corey Sanhagen. I'm not even talking about TJ Dillashaw. I have every confidence that the number two bantamweight is going to plow through TJ Dillashaw the next time that they meet up. There's your penance. You two run it back. You have your fight. You have your real champion. And you face the deserving number two ranked bantamweight in the world. You deserve the number one contender, who is Corey Sanhagen, who I said, mark my words, give it a year. I said on the American Slacker podcast, I said on the YFB Network when we went live, give it a year and Corey Sanhagen will be wearing the strap. Did I expect it to come in this manner? Of course not. Nothing's predictable in this sport. But start putting penalties on these fighters who I've put too much trust in, and start holding them accountable. Commission, referees, cornermen, whoever's not doing their job, wherever the disconnect is, fix it before you circle the drain all the way to where this sport is completely irrelevant and you're back to where you were in 1993. There's my spill. We'll see you guys next week when I hopefully have Brother Sin back on the Blockhead Mansion, when I have him back at the brick wall. Maybe I'll have my composure by that time, and I will see you guys next week. Same Blockhead time, same Blockhead channel. I have got to calm down.